not for fuel.
60 votes will be needed for the subsidy-ending amendment to move forward. It's unclear if those votes are there. David Wellen, NPR News, the Capitol.
Emergency crews in Iowa are working feverishly to keep floods from reaching the town of Hamburg after water from the Missouri River breached the main levee. Yesterday, the swollen river punched through two levees in northwest Missouri, sending huge amounts of water flooding rural farmland in the direction of Hamburg. Two more American service members are dead, killed yesterday while conducting operations in southern Iraq. The U.S. military statement does not give details of the operations. It comes just days after a rocket attack on a Baghdad compound killed five American soldiers. Latest deaths brings the number of U.S. service members who've died since the start of the war to 4,462. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
Good morning and welcome to hour number two of Focus, our morning talk show. This is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer for the program. And on the controls right now is Jason Croft. Kyle Mabry was on hour number one. We're also happy to have here back on the show once again, Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics, mostly audio and video. And he writes for the News Gazette. His writing has appeared in other specialty publications, and he's also been good enough here every once in a while, several times throughout the year, to be here and to talk about what's new. And there is always something new if you're thinking about bringing some new piece of equipment into your home, or you have something you want to do, you're not quite sure how. Call in and tell us about it, and Rich, I think, can advise you. Questions certainly are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Email, you can do that too. will-talk@illinois.edu. Hey, thank you very much for being here once again.
It's my pleasure. And, you know, it seems like the goal of the electronics industry is to keep people confused. That's their overriding
goal. They're doing
goal.
A great job of it, too.
Because on the way in here, Harriet asked me about that she'd like to stream movies from Amazon, for example. What does she need to do that? And, of course, Netflix offers online streaming of movies and various other sources. There's the YouTube Premium service, and all kinds of people are streaming entertainment to you on the web. Some of it's free. Most of it, the legitimate stuff, you have to pay for. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out there's a half a dozen different boxes that'll do this for you, but not all the boxes work with all the services. Like if you get a box optimized for Google, you may not be able to get Amazon, for example. If you get the Netflix box, it may not do Google. They're having all these restrictive things to keep you with their content provider. And I can't remember which box works with which service. I'll tell you that right now because it gets so confusing. The only box that works with all the services, if you take a PC or Mac and use that as the gateway, then you can use it. It's agnostic and you can choose any of the services, stream them onto your hard drive, and then watch them on your TV at your, you know, leisure. Mm-hmm. That's the only way that you can get all the services with one, but then you have to go through the operating system. Easier with a Mac than the PC. Although, I must say, Windows Media on the PC is blissfully, considering it's a Microsoft product, pretty simple to use. I use it to record programs on Channel 12 all the time. I use it as a DVR. Mm-hmm. But that's one way you can download things, or you can get the app from the provider that goes on your PC or Mac and then downloads the movies for you. It's a great way. That's why all these video rental stores are going out of business. Who wants to spend gas and time driving to what used to be Blockbuster when you can press two buttons at home and have the same movie waiting for you in 45 minutes or half an hour on your computer or your little box or whatever it is? Some of these boxes actually stream the movie in real time. Others buffer it on the hard drive, which is probably preferable if you have a flaky internet connection or it's not fast enough. Your cable provider wants to do the same thing for you, and they're getting jealous of people downloading movies from the internet and not buying them from the cable provider. So they're making things a little more difficult as well, saying, well, you ought to buy those movies from us, not go on Netflix and get them. So they're trying to make things a little more difficult. So it's a difficult, brave world out there. And then some sets, like most of the new TV sets, Sony, Samsung, all have some of these features built in. But of course, like with Sony, they want you to stream it from the Sony store. but they also have provisions for certain other providers. So it gets very confusing. And this is a whole brave new world. When you announce that I'm going to be on your show today and you say Rich specializes mainly in audio video, which is true, but now the dividing line between audio video and computers and the internet, it's almost vanished because everything is everything. I get emails every day, press releases from major hi-fi companies that used to make just audio receivers, that you can, now you connect all these to the net because you want to listen to Pandora, you want to listen to Last FM or whatever.
Yeah.
So they're all internet connected as well. And then, of course, they all use Wi-Fi to blast it around your house. So if you have a Wi-Fi receiver, and there are boxes on the market that, of course, do this for you as well. And there's the Bose system where you plug a little USB key in your computer and the Wave radio picks it up. It's a whole different world than it was even just 10 years ago. It's an amazing world of convenience. What I fear is that all this wonderful convenience will come at a price because what's free today will not be free a few years from now. There won't be all this free services. I just read in Business Week it was on CNN Online on their business page, how absurd it is that Pandora is making a public stock offering to subsidize the fact that the more people who use Pandora, the more money they lose. Because the more people who subscribe to Pandora, which is this internet streaming service where you create your own basic radio station or playlist, is that every new person that signs on, they have to pay higher royalties to the record labels. But they can't raise their advertising rates to cover that. So they don't get increased advertising. They just have to keep paying out more to the labels providing the music. And maybe at some point they will have enough listeners to justify raising their ad rates or selling more advertising. But at this point, it's pretty absurd what's going on. It's there's no profit potential for some of these services unless they really rejigger everything. Mm-hmm. So what is free now to the user can't stay that way. It just can't. And so we're going to see some interesting times ahead as all these things – it's sort of like, you know, 10 years ago Napster, 12 years ago Napster was the big thing. And then the record company said, you can't help people steal our music. So they shut down Napster, and they've made tentative steps to making sure everybody pays for what they get. But there's still a lot of free services that are covered by advertising or other ways that these providers pay the record labels. But they can't go on that way. I mean, some way – the user is going to have to pay ultimately.
Yeah. Well, questions on any of this are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We did the last time, you know, we're still doing now, Celeste is still hosting a show every month where it's about computers. And actually, the last time we had the computer guy on, we had someone who wrote in with a question, and it was about how do I connect the internet, how do I get the internet and the television together so that I can watch stuff that's on the internet? And it sounds like, as far as that's concerned, at least at this point, unless you want to do what you suggest and use a computer to do the thing, maybe look at the various providers. You can, if you want to watch movies, you can do Netflix, you can do Apple. I don't know how many others there. Maybe you look at what it is they're offering,
yeah,
what it costs, and say, what's the best deal for the money, and just say, well, I'll pick one, and that's pretty much what you have to do. Is there a way to take the internet and either wirelessly or with a FireWire connection actually plug the internet into the television, or does there have to be something in between there and the TV? You just can't plug right into the TV.
Well, as I was saying, the newer models of TV sets, the ones that have come out in the past 6 months to a year, the premium models have their own internet connectivity. You can plug the network straight from the wall jack into the TV. But you still need a router, of course, or a router in the process. Yeah. But you don't need a special box. But if your TV is older than 6 months or a year and it doesn't have that special ability to, quote, tune the internet – it just gets so complicated compared to the old days. You went out and you got your VHS tape, and that was that. And it's wonderful because the quality is much better, and it's easier, and it's cheaper, actually, in many respects, than going to rent a videotape, unless you go to the new Redbox thing and you get the dollar DVD rentals, which is a great bargain, but you're still spending gas to get there unless you're on your way to something else. I know they're in front of some of the food stores and drug stores. And that way, if you're filling your prescription, you can get a DVD at the same time, then it's not going to cost you much extra. But there's so many opportunities now, so many choices, and the quality is so much better. But here's the kicker. You need a high-speed broadband internet connection, and the higher your speed, the broader your band, so to speak, the better your quality is going to be. If you want to download a high-definition video, which is now available on the web, you really need a good wideband connection, a broadband connection, because the basic one is going to be a trickle compared to what you need for HD downloads. So if you don't live in an area that has either UVerse or Comcast or MediaCom, if you live out in the country, and many of our listeners do here, no luck. They have to rent DVDs because you need even with a satellite provided downlink, it's probably not fast enough to really enjoy this wealth of material that's on the internet.
Well, for those people for whom they would say, well, you know, for me right now, DVD still just works just fine. How much longer will there be DVDs? Does anybody know?
I think DVDs probably have a 10-year lifespan, especially Blu-ray, will be around probably for another 10 years. And then we're going to make the next big leap. And I think they're already thinking about how to get people to buy new TVs by making them ultra-high definition, like doubling the resolution, which we really don't need for home use. They're in 3D, of course, and there's already 3D downloads available. So I still think 3D is the biggest boondoggle ever offered to the consumer. I don't
mean
really
3D television.
Just if you want to see 3D, go to a movie theater and see it right. And now the big thing this year, as I wrote in a column recently, is they're hoping by January to have home 3D TVs that don't need the glasses. But that comes with another whole set of problems as well, because you have to sit in a certain place and you can't be too far off angle. And it's more expensive to do it that way in some respects. So we'll see what happens, but there's going to be another big fight because none of these are standardized yet either. So it's not going to be broadcast. It probably will never be broadcast because the FCC is not about to start another rulemaking procedure for a standard for 3D broadcasts. It just isn't going to happen, not at this point when on-the-air television is going to be history, as perhaps in the next 10 to 15 years because of the way things are transpiring now. So
yeah, it sort of astounds me that anybody would really think that that was all that attractive. That is 3D television. I think you can go now, and for we're talking about money here, but for a reasonable amount of money, you can get a very nice, good sized flat panel TV. You can set yourself up a little home theater. You can have in your home a very pleasant, cool, vastly better than when we were kids, movie viewing experience in 2D. And I'm thinking, why do we need this extra thing?
Well, David, think of it this way. During the WILL TV Channel 12 pledge drive, you could reach out from the screen and go put your hand in somebody's pocket.
Oh, that's just too frightening. Or they could reach into the picture and smack the people on the air and saying, oh, we'll knock it off. Questions are welcome here on audio and video equipment. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You can send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu, or will-talk. Someone told me the other day, no, it's not a dash. It's a hyphen. Is there anything else? Say now there is someone who now is going out and wants to buy a new television set, state-of-the-art flat panel TV. What are there some particular things that you would say keep one or two things in mind?
Well, something I wrote about recently, and talking about hyphens and dashes, the same sort of thing, is the big box stores are now advertising, quote, LED TVs. And this is the biggest misnomer. There's no such thing as an LED TV unless you go to the Jumbotron at the baseball stadium and see the big display. The TV is still an LCD TV, a liquid crystal display. The light source for the liquid crystals happens to be generated from an LED instead of a fluorescent light tube, as in the past. That's what they're referring to. But to call it an LED TV, because there is such a thing where you can use the LEDs as pixels, but there's no consumer televisions that do that. So it's really confusing people. I get emails from readers of my Gazette column saying, I just went and bought an LED TV. They said it was the greatest. And I said, well, it's a good light source. It's an improvement over the what's called cold cathode, which is nothing but a fluorescent light tube. But it's not an actual LED TV. Just as 20 years ago, before we had digital television, they were advertising digital TVs because they had a digital enhancement circuit in that improved the picture, or 30 years ago, digital radio tuners that used a digital tuning circuitry, but that there was no digital radio. So all these things that confuse the consumer, and who knows, maybe someday there will be a home LED TV. I tend to doubt it at this point, but all these things that are advertised and people go into the store and they're totally dumbfounded. Most of the salespeople at these stores have no idea what they're selling. Very few of them receive extensive training. Most of them aren't engineers, haven't followed the industry. And they're nice enough people, and some of them are sent. I know that Best Buy has some sort of training institute where they send their salespeople to for a week to at least get them some background. But these people aren't terribly knowledgeable about what they're selling. And there's so much that they're selling that it's impossible for somebody who works in one of these stores to know everything about all these products. And again, keeping up with whatever box the manager tells you to push this week that gets you internet TV. And the future of on-the-air television is endangered because, frankly, just about everybody is going to have cable. And on-the-air can't deliver some of these things that cable is delivering now. And you start to wonder, I read in Great Britain, they're migrating all the free on-the-air television to a satellite, and you'll have a satellite dish and get free what used to be on-the-air local terrestrial broadcast will come from the satellite. And that way they're freeing up all these frequencies for cell phones. And that's basically what the future holds is 4G, you see all those advertisements. Well, they need the bandwidth to do that. And right now, TV is sitting in that prime bandwidth, and the cell phone people and the data people want to get all these broadcast television stations off the air. That's the goal. And even the FCC now is starting to think, maybe this is TV is past its prime. Now, obviously, there are probably scores of millions of Americans who would want to keep their broadcast TV. But at some point, when we get universal broadband, then there's really no reason to have broadcast television in the way we know it now. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, the AM and FM radio bands are so tiny that there's no economic incentive to get rid of them.
Yay!
Because, an FM, the whole FM radio band occupies 1/6 of a TV channel, basically. So it's not something that's economically imperative to get rid of, as with TV, which takes this huge chunk of the spectrum. And I predict that TV, as we know it, 15 years from now, I don't know. It may not be as we know it. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, again, we're here nattering on. If we can answer questions, we'd be happy to do that. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The guest this morning is Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics for the News Gazette newspaper and has also written for other publications as well. And if you got a question, you can give us a call. Just going back to the TV thing for a moment, because I know in the past we have talked about your recommendation that if you were going to buy a television that you look for one that is an LCD that uses the LEDs because the picture quality is slightly better.
And it's slightly more energy efficient.
Is now that becoming the standard that most flat panel LCDs do work with the LEDs?
Yeah, I'd say probably at least 50% of the sets on the market now are illuminated by LEDs, and they have a slightly more neutral spectrum, so the colors are a little more accurate, and their color spectrum is slightly wider, which means you do get some better colors. There's some dispute in the industry whether this really makes a big difference or not. And it runs a little bit cooler, not a lot, because cold cathode tubes, which are the fluorescent lights, are pretty cool as it is. So there's an incremental gain by using LEDs. What some companies do, Samsung did it on some of their high-end sets. I'm not sure they're still doing it, is that LEDs give you one huge advantage if it's used properly, is that you can illuminate individual groups of pixels, of picture elements. Mm-hmm. And therefore, LCD is not famed for showing true black on the screen because these are like little window shades or little shutters that close. They don't close all the way, so some light escapes around the LCD. And so you get a dark gray, you don't get black. If you pulse the LED behind it so that on a scene where there's a true black, it turns off the LED, and therefore there's no light escaping through the LCD, then you get true black. So they can use this technology, whereas with the fluorescent lighting, it ramps up and it ramps down. You can't turn it on and off instantaneously. It's either it fades in and fades up. So that never worked for that. But LEDs, you can have instantaneous on and off. They don't just sort of fade out the way a fluorescent tube does. So it does give you the potential on some high-end sets to actually vary the picture intensity by also controlling the light source, which they've never been able to do before. But very few sets do that at this point. So,
okay. We have a caller here. Let's talk with them in Champaign, line number one.
Hi.
Hi.
I have first a complaint about digital TV. I hate it. The only good thing about digital TV is the WILL has three stations. That's the only good thing, because we live out in the country. We have an indoor antenna, and every time you get up and walk across the room, you know, the picture starts to pixelate. But that's my complaint. My question is, we have we burn DVDs a lot. We copy a lot of shows that we like because we're not home in the evenings a lot. So we've gone through three DVD machines in about the last 2 years. They just don't last very long. So I looked into a DVR, which out here in the country, we don't have cable or anything. So they said we could use it, but once you pay for the machine, you're still paying $20-some dollars a month for the service, and I'm not sure what the service is. So my question is there a good DVD recorder out there that will last longer? And what are we paying for in the service for the DVR?
Okay, the DVR obviously be referred to as a TiVo.
Right.
And what they do is they create this incredibly user-friendly menu where you can say, let's say you like Tom Hanks movies. You can tell your TiVo that anytime there's a Tom Hanks movie on anywhere in the universe that your set can receive, it'll record a Tom Hanks movie. That's what you're paying for, basically. It's a very elaborate selecting system for what you record. If you want to record, let's say your favorite TV show is sometimes preempted by a football game or a basketball game, it knows that your show is starting late and will start recording your show, like, let's say, at 60 Minutes on CBS on Sundays, which is often preempted by a football game. It actually will know when the football game ends and start your recording at 6:23 or 6:34 when the game ends. Virtually nothing else can do that. Unfortunately, as you say, if you don't have cable and you don't have satellite, then you're paying this exorbitant fee. It used to be you'd pay $15 a month just for the programming. Now you're paying $15 a month for the menu that allows you to record the programming. It doesn't have any content provided with it.
That's what I wondered when I talked to the salesperson. I said, what are we paying for? And he was like, the service. And I'm saying, what's the service?
Well, the way around that is to use a satellite service. I mean, if you want to really see how beautiful digital can be, of course, is you subscribe to a satellite, which is expensive, you know, Dish or DirecTV.
Exactly.
And they provide the DVR with the menus that record off the system. And generally, with their promotional things, you can get the DVR without extra charge. So,
right. But I get so irritated, you know, that they say, you know, cable TV, all of the things that you can get, but, you know, you're paying a lot of money every month for this when, you know, mostly what we watch is WILL anyway.
Well, you have one other solution. It's the one I chose to do because it's a kind of universal solution. It's a little more expensive initially, but there's no ongoing cost to it. For about $500 to $600, you can have a custom-built PC or a mini Mac that acts as a DVR. And it comes with its own menuing system. Microsoft, for example, the PC provides free menus. And so I go on their menuing system and see, oh, I'm going to be out during Masterpiece on Sunday night. And I click on Masterpiece and I come back and it's been recorded for me just like a TiVo would do. It doesn't offer the option of recording every Tom Hanks movie you've ever want to see, but it does do all the basic stuff. You tell it where you live and whether you have cable or not. And so, for example, you obviously don't. So it'll just show you the on-air channels that are available. And you simply click on the ones you want to record. And like if you want to record Masterpiece every week, it'll do that for you. And it's a little more expensive. It's about twice as expensive initially out of the gate because You can get the fully loaded TiVo for $300 or less. But then there's no charge going onward, so you've made it up in a year, basically.
Yeah.
And I've recommended in my column, I'm not sure I should recommend on the air, but there is a store I dealt with here in town that's very good at building PCs just for that purpose, and I'm very happy with the kind of work they did. And then the menuing system and everything comes with Microsoft Windows. Windows 7 has a very good media center. Windows Media Center works really well, unlike earlier versions. And you can also do it with a Mac. It doesn't have to be a PC. And there's a mini Mac for about $500, and all you need to do is you will need a TV tuner card in the computer one way or the other. But those are pretty common and pretty inexpensive these days. And I suggest you try either putting in an attic antenna or an outdoor antenna. It'll solve your digital TV problems, give you much better reception on
the message channels. Yeah, the problem is, I mean, where we live in the country with the wind, you know, and lightning, we're really exposed. So an outdoor antenna would get blown down a couple times a year or get hit by lightning.
Well, then try one in the attic. That helps a lot of people. It's not as good as outdoor, but it's better than the one near the TV set.
Yeah.
And you need to get that little bit of height and a little bit more power, and a lot of people do use attic antennas, and they generally don't attract lightning, and they're protected. So that's one way to go, and it's not terribly expensive. You can get a decent attic antenna from Radio Shack for $45 and give that a try, and I think you'll find how much better your reception is.
And does it only hook up to one TV, though?
Oh, no. You can put a splitter on it and a little amplifier. It's another $15 or so, $20, and it can provide as many hook to many TVs as you desire.
Oh, okay. I'll have to talk to somebody about that. And the PC, that sounds like something to look into, because that sounds like it's got a lot of it would mean we wouldn't have to DVD stuff. It would all go on the hard drive, right?
Right. But even better is that if you bought a computer with a DVD burner in it, if there's a particular show you loved and wanted to keep it or share it with a friend, you could just push a button in the media center and it would record from the hard drive to the DVD.
Yeah.
So you have that little versatility that you can archive shows that you really want to keep. And that's another advantage. And I've done that occasionally when there's a particularly great show on that I want to keep. The DVD will only record in standard definition, of course, not high definition, unless you get a Blu-ray, and that gets the price up there. You don't want to bother with that. But, there's a lot of versatility. Plus, being a PC, you can use it for other things. So it doesn't have to be strictly your TV recorder. You can, do word processing or spreadsheets in your basement or wherever you're watching your TV.
Uh-huh.
And so you get a multi-purpose use out of the machine, so it doesn't have to be strictly a boat anchor for your TV set.
Okay, and you said there's a place in town that does specialize in making PCs that would do this?
Yeah, actually, any of the computer specialists in town can, but if you want to call back after the broadcast, or should I just tell the...
Why don't you just go ahead? I think it's okay.
Okay. I dealt with a little store called PC Deli that's in the Marketplace View Shopping Mall across from Barnes & Noble, and... those guys there are incredibly sharp. I was amazed at how much they knew. And I said, here's what I want to do. And they said, yeah, we can do this for $600. And they delivered a set to me that a PC that was optimized for just doing that. I mean, I could do word processing on it if I wanted to, but the software they loaded was strictly for, they put a good tuner card in, and I've been happy with it ever since. So that's an option.
I went to them years ago when one of our PCs died in the... to see if they could recover the hard drive because they were recommended, and they in that particular case they couldn't, but they were very, very nice about everything. So.
Well, they've saved me a lot of hassles with my PCs, and I pay them list price. I'm not getting any discounts from them, so just as I'm amazed at how much they know between the four guys that work there. They're truly amazing. So.
Good.
All right.
Okay. Well thank you very much.
So then just I got another caller here. We'll get right to it. If you do have cable, so you're getting television that way, or maybe now you can get it from the phone company, so you can go through AT&T from one of those wires, or I suppose if you have a dish, so you have DirecTV or Dish, any of them will sell you for an additional charge as a service some way to record programs for watching later. If you have that opportunity because your service provider provides it, How do you then weigh the idea, well, I can pay them an extra, $15 a month or $20 a month or something, and then have that happen that way, as opposed to wanting to set up something where you have a box, it belongs to you, it sits there next to the TV?
Well, there are advantages to the box provided by the satellite company or by the cable company in that it's optimized for their service. It's incredibly simple to use because all the menus are optimized for their service, so you're not going to have anything extraneous or questionable as far as how to record a program. And if you do it during one of their promotional periods, if you look at the ads in the paper, which seem to be every day, Dish Network advertises a free DVR for the lifetime of your contract or an HD DVR for 1 year for free, and then it's $5 a month or whatever, which is I consider a bargain. Mm-hmm. They really don't charge a lot for the boxes because they want you to record more of their programming and pay for the pay-per-view programs, and that's what you can do. So I think that the box, adding the hard drive, basically what you do is add a hard drive to their tuner, and it's so cheap for them to offer this. And Dish Network had some problems because they infringed on some TiVo patents, and TiVo sued them, and this went through court for about 6 years, and Dish finally lost a few months ago. But fortunately, they reached a financial settlement with TiVo because the option was TiVo could order them to turn off all of those boxes. Everybody who had a box from them, a DVR, would stop working. Fortunately, Dish agreed to pay TiVo a pirate's ransom, and now all those boxes continue working. They probably have to raise the price. But So they use the basic TiVo technology. It's just given to you in a different form. But that's, I think, an incredible bargain rather than messing with a PC if you have cable or satellite, especially satellite. The satellite companies are head-to-head with offering you freebies to get you away from cable. And my goodness, in my neighborhood, I think every day I see a new Dish pop up on a roof. Even though we have broadband, high-speed cable, I think the cable company must be asleep because every day somebody else switches to satellite, which shows you the cable company is excessively expensive compared to what satellite offers. But every day there's a new Dish or DirecTV Dish sprouting up in the neighborhood. And with some of them even offer you two DVRs, one for your bedroom TV, one for your living room TV. They're desperate to get your business. And for the first year, it's a great bargain. It's either 6 months or a year, depending on what they're offering. But you can negotiate with them. You can sort of talk them down in price in a lot of respects. I sign up, will you give me this for this? And sometimes you can get away with it. Yeah. So,
our guest this morning, Rich Warren, he writes about consumer electronics for the News Gazette. You can see his column on Thursdays in the special entertainment section. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
Did you see Stephen Colbert on the Tonys? On the next Fresh Air, Stephen Colbert talks about singing and dancing with a hat and cane in the New York Philharmonic production of Stephen Sondheim's musical Company. The filmed version opens in theaters this week. Of course, we'll also talk about the Colbert Report. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you here. On the program tomorrow, we'll be talking with Richard McNally, who teaches in the Department of Psychology at Harvard. And the basic question is the title of a book that he's written, What is Mental Illness? Also, we'll talk about treating pain and doing it non-surgically. Our guest on the program tomorrow at 11, Dr. Hyun-Chul Jung. He is a pain management specialist and anesthesiologist at Carl. Thursday at 10, we'll do one of those shows we call Talk to the Managers. If you have questions, comments on the programs you hear on the station, you can call in. Mark Leonard will be here. He's the general manager for Illinois Public Media. And Jay Pierce will be here. He's the director of created content. You can check out the schedule for the rest of the week next week. You can listen to past programs by going to our website, will.illinois.edu. And the guest this morning is Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics for the News Gazette. You have questions about television, about audio, about anything else in this very confusing world of consumer electronics, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Urbana, line 2. Hello.
Oh, yes, hello. I just have a quick comment. It turns out that Magnavox actually makes a standalone DVR box that works very much like a VCR. It gives you the option of either doing recording to its hard disk, or it lets you burn a CD if you want to do that. It's programmable and so on. And it's something you can get either from Amazon or from Walmart online. And I think the prices are somewhere in the range of $220 to $260.
Right. Actually, there are several. I mean, Samsung made one for a while, and so did Panasonic. But they're getting harder and harder to find. As you said, you pretty much have to go online to find them. You're not going to see them on the shelf.
Well, you do, except that it's probably cheaper than the PC kind of solution.
Oh, it's certainly cheaper. Not quite as versatile, but certainly cheaper.
Yeah, but it's very flexible, and we've had one for probably 2 years now, and it works very well.
Okay, well, I'm sure the woman who was just online talking to us was listening, and that's another thing for her to pursue, and that might be even a better deal than a PC. So.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I just wanted to give you that bit of information.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks very much. Mm-hmm. We'll just keep going here. Now we have a couple of other callers, and go to another Urbana person here. This is line one. In Urbana. Hello. Yeah. Hi.
I wonder if it's possible to convert a 16-millimeter reel-to-reel film to some digital format like a DVD.
Yes, it can be done. Unfortunately, I don't believe there are any local places that do that any longer. Hmm. There are some in Chicago, but the best way to find out is online. They are some reputable places. And David, you have a photographer on the show occasionally.
Occasionally, Brian Johnson teaches, and that's one of the things that that we have talked about, the fact that there are places that will do that, but you have to send your stuff off to have them do it.
But they tend to be reputable, and they also tend to be surprisingly inexpensive, considering how much labor is involved with doing this sort of thing. But they do it in such mass quantities that they can do it, especially 16 millimeter is a little – most people have home 8 millimeter or super 8 millimeter. 16 is unusual that you'd have home movies in that format, but –
it's not a home movie. It's a research film that was made by a film company some years back. But I would like to be able to transport it and use it, you know.
Just type in the Bing or Google search bar 16mm to DVD, and it should pop up. Now, I can't, you know, I don't know which of these firms are reputable and which aren't, but from what your guest, Brian, said, that there's several of them that do a really decent job of converting, so...
Excellent. And Brian Johnson's in the photography department?
He's in the journalism department.
Oh,
he's a photojournalist, and that's, I mean, he's here on the show occasionally. We talk about cameras, and he's a guy who's been, has a very long experience as a photographer, but as a news, he originally actually worked for the Gazette before he went over and started teaching at the U of I. So his photojournalism is his thing.
Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Well, let's talk with somebody in Savoy here. Line number three. Hello.
I have a question regarding LED TV sets. There is a difference, I understand, between edge-lit LED sets and ones in which the whole backlighting is LED. Do you know about that?
Yeah, I was sort of obliquely referring to that when I was talking about being able to pulse individual LEDs to improve the picture contrast and the dark areas. The edge lit is the cheap way of doing it. That's basically where the way the TV has been illuminated for quite a while. It's the cheap and easy way of going about it compared to actually putting the LEDs behind the LCD shutters. And that's a somewhat more expensive, but also a better way of doing it. And I would bet you dollars to donuts that most of the salespeople in the stores don't know which is which sets have which. But you have to go online and do some research about that.
The backlit ones have an incredible contrast ratio.
Right.
Also, in regard to the Magnavox DVD recorder, I have one, and they are wonderful. And Walmart is selling them, I think, for around $160.
Now, this DVD or DVR or both?
DVD.
Okay.
It's a dual-head VHS tape to DVD or vice versa.
Oh, right. I am aware of those. They've been around, and, yeah, that would be a very good buy. I think the person who called before also was interested in having a hard drive, a DVR recorder as part of that arrangement.
Yeah.
And there are some on the market that do that as well. But certainly at $169, I doubt it would last all that long, but it's an incredible bargain.
Yeah, I don't expect them to be available forever, you know, at that price.
Not only at that price, but to be available, period, because they're phasing those out. Now, the DVD part of the recorder should last a fair amount of time, but the VHS is really cheaply constructed, and I wouldn't give that a long lifespan because that's so mechanical that when you look back at how we function with VHS and beta all those years, and what a kludge it was, how difficult it was to make that thing work, that the fact that we did have TV recorders is truly amazing compared to the elegance of a laser-burned disc or a hard drive doing this. One other thing I want to add about the store-bought DVR versus a computer is with a computer, A, you can have any choice of hard drive you want. So if you want to put 1,000 hours of TV on your hard drive, you can buy a 1 terabyte hard drive and have 1,000 hours of TV. Or if the hard drive dies, you can replace it easily. You just unplug it, shove a new one in. I mean, it's a 10-minute job. If you buy a packaged unit that acts as a DVR, when that hard drive fails, it's history. It's very hard to replace those particular hard drives usually, the way they're wired in. I know in TiVo, if you break the seal, you're out of luck. You can't – if you hack a TiVo, you're in big trouble with TiVo. People do it, but it's not legitimate.
Well, I've had my Magnavox about 3 years, and it's still working, but I bought a second one as a backup just in case.
Well, you know, that's an excellent idea, and I recommend to people that if there's a particular electronic product that you really value and that's on the cusp of obsolescence, that you go out and buy a second one and keep it in the closet.
Yes, because you never know when you'll go to the store and they've disappeared.
That's right. It's amazing that you think something, oh, I'll get a replacement when this one wears out, and you go back and the replacement doesn't exist
too
at
bad,
all.
Yes.
So that's a very good comment. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good. And again, this next caller is somebody in Urbana in line number one. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. I was wondering if Rich would have any advice for aspect ratio madness. I'm being driven bananas by 4:3 DVDs, playing them on a 16:9 TV, and frequently having them stretched to fill the full screen. Other times, even more maddening is having a black line at the top and the bottom and still have it stretched out in that way. Is there any consistent way to get a DVD player to talk to the TV and have it play at the original aspect ratio?
Most TVs, I'd say probably 90% of the TVs in the market, have a menu where you can set the aspect ratio manually. So if you have a 4x3, you can tell it that's what it's going to display. Many TVs, if not most, also have an automatic setting where it senses whatever is coming in, what the aspect ratio is, and adjusts automatically. Now, what frustrates a lot of people, though, is they sort of arbitrarily chose 16:9 as the one that was closest to 35 millimeter. However, there's hardly any movies that are exactly 16:9. They range in all kinds of aspect ratios, and thus even when you have a widescreen movie on a widescreen TV, you may see letterbox and you may see a black bar at the top and bottom because the movie is actually a wider screen movie than 16:9. So there is no perfection in this, and you can – some very fancy TVs, you can twiddle with it and get it, you know, but it's – that's the way it is. But you can, in fact, go into your TV's menu system and there will be something that tells the display what aspect ratio you want.
Okay. And, so, but one might indeed have to set it manually when watching a 4:3 piece of content versus got something that's actual widescreen.
Well, actually, I know my TV automatically senses and adjusts by itself. So if I put something that's the old 4x3, it shows me a square, basically a square picture, almost square picture. And then when I put a widescreen in, it shows me that. But even the more primitive TVs, you can manually set it so you don't have to live with it. Of course, you're going to have the black bars on the left and right instead of the top and bottom like in the old days. One good piece of news, at least for people who have LCD TVs, in the old days when you had a cathode ray tube TV, a picture tube TV, when you letterbox something, you were actually damaging the screen because the black areas were still being burned in by the electronic beam, and you could actually create a ghost image permanently of where the letterbox had been. LCDs don't have that. Plasma has it to a slight degree, but plasma has circuits that eliminate the problem. They have created computerized circuits that prevent burn-in on most plasma sets now. But so it's not as bad as it used to be when you have the letterboxing problem, at least.
Okay, well, I guess I'll try to revisit those menus, but it drove me nuts trying to come up with one, and I never did actually succeed at it, but I guess I should try again.
Well, take a look in the manual, because I think every single TV out there does have that manual setting, even though it's very inconvenient.
Okay, thanks much.
All right, 5-6 minutes left with Rich Warren, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. You want to give us a call?
It's summertime now, and I want to add something else. Air conditioning is the best friend of your electronics. And even if you don't feel you need air conditioning, your TV set and your other electronics really will love you for the air conditioning. The best way to wear out, to prematurely age anything electronic, is to get it hot. So if you have a TV, keep it well ventilated. The more ventilation it has, the better. Don't put it up flush against the wall or into a corner. And also, take the vacuum with that little fuzzy brush that comes with the vacuum cleaners and vacuum the vents, the grill, the not the screen, but the air vents around the back and sides of the TV. Make sure there's no little dust bunnies accumulated there. Do it on a monthly basis. The TV has to breathe. In fact, most TVs even have a little fan inside of them to get the air flowing. You will extend the life of your TV dramatically because heat is what makes products wear out. Same applies to PCs. And so make sure there's plenty of ventilation and try to keep the room temperature below 80, because otherwise you are going to prematurely wear out your electronics.
Right. Here's an email, and actually it's about plasma burn-in. This person writes, I have a plasma TV hooked up to a computer and do my best not to leave a static image on for too long. I occasionally run the TV's whitewash utility. However, how much risk is there long-term in burn-in?
That depends on the exact plasma set you have and the circuitry built into it. Plasma itself can be have a burn-in problem. I mean, the nature of the technology is such. But the newer plasma sets, the ones made in the past 3 years or so, they've improved the whole plasma process, and they have all these elaborate circuits that make sure no single plasma cell stays illuminated or whatever for a particular period of time. They make it invisible. You can't see it at work, but it protects the set. So it's hard to say on your particular set whether your limit would be 1 hour or 5 hours. Overall, it's best not to leave a static image on a plasma screen just for the sake of safety. But if, for example, the W symbol when there's a weather alert or whatever it stays on your screen, that probably won't burn in. Plus, most TV stations now make that 50% transparent, so it's not as intense as it once was in the old days where it was a really solid, bright object that really would burn the screen. Mm-hmm. So I think most modern plasma sets are about, I guess, and I'm sort of pulling this out of a hat, but probably about 85 to 90% free of risk of burn-in. But you don't want to force the issue. There's always ways you can, in fact, do it if you're abusive enough to the display. So that's all I can tell you.
All right. I have a couple of callers here. We'll try to get them both in Urbana Line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
My biggest gripe is that stations like TNT – who will go to the extreme of taking a pan scan movie and blow it up for you on your HD, even on their HD channel. Getting people to actually broadcast stuff in original aspect ratio is hard. And number two, going back to the DVR thing, cable companies lost one of the edges they have when they ignored and are really suppressing the cable card and TV GOS systems, which for a while you could actually buy exactly the machine that that woman was talking about. A machine that you could actually own and would get the off-air TV guide and allow you to do the Tom Hanks just as well as you can with TiVo. So I'll just let that go. It's just my gripe of the week.
Yeah, and you're right. And what can you do? There was a competing brand to TiVo called Replay that was on the market for about a year, and you could do that sort of thing with it among other knockoffs. And then they suddenly vanished because TiVo started enforcing all its patents. And the competition, unless the money in TiVo is that paying that $15 a month for your program guide, and they weren't going to brook much competition with that. So,
all right, Urbana Line 2. Hello. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a 4-year-old HP plasma screen, and I've noticed that on really wide shots, like a NASCAR race or a football game, the screen grays out. And it becomes like a ghost-like image. But when the camera zooms back in, I get full color and full picture. I found no adjustment on the TV to take care of that. Any suggestions?
No, I sort of feel like Dr. Swearingen did the other day with the person with the leg rash. Without it seeing it and actually being there, it's really hard to diagnose.
Okay.
I mean, off the top of my head, I guess you could possibly have a power supply problem, and that you might want to check. But other than that, I really couldn't tell you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. Well, we got a couple of minutes here. Something I wanted to ask you about, and I'm not quite sure how complicated this might be or what sort of answer there is, has to do with the fact that now so many people are listening to music with some sort of MP3 player. And if you're listening with earbuds in a fairly noisy place, that may be fine, depending upon what you're listening to. But also, I think there are now people who have this idea, well, I should be able to take that and somehow plug it into my stereo system and listen to my music that I've recorded on my MP3 player that way. And I think when they do that, they realize, well, actually, with earbuds in a noisy place, maybe it sounds fine, but if you put it through your stereo system, you're going to realize they've made some real compromises to crunch that music down to put it in that little thing you can put in your pocket. Is there anything that you can do that would make an MP3 actually sound better if you play it through a good system?
Oh, yeah. You see, because MP3 is just an overall specification for a number of things, and the sampling rate is what counts. And the basic minimal iPod rate, I think, is 128 kilobits per second. But you can set, if you go to iTunes or any other of these programs, you can set it for 256 or even the insane rate of over 300. And once you get past 256, it starts sounding more and more like a real, honest-to-goodness, unmutilated sound file rather than an MP3. So what you give up is that you give up storage time.
Right.
So an iPod that could normally store 50 hours of music will now only store 25 hours of music, et cetera. But now these iPods and similar devices are so capacious in what they can store that, okay, so they can store 1,000 hours, so you're down to 500. Is that going to hurt? So just increase the sampling rate. I do that on all mine. I won't use less than 128 per channel, which is 256 total. And at that rate, they don't sound quite so bad. And the ones I make for myself in the car, I record at 320. And at that rate, you can't tell the difference between that and what's called a WAV file or the unadulterated full uncompressed file. So, yeah, you can just simply... And even with those little earbuds, you can hear a very slight difference if you increase the quality. But it's a cheap and easy thing to do. There also, Apple offers different algorithms with it has its own proprietary format of MP3. And if you use the Apple algorithm, you get better sound quality because they've tweaked it. So you can actually stay at the same data rate, but use one of the improved encoding schemes and you get a slightly better sound quality. So yeah, you can, in fact, don't leave it set for the basic. And now when you download from iTunes, so you also have the option of a high quality version. For it used to be extra charge. Now I think it's about the same price to download the high quality version.
So if you've done it with the lower sampling rate after the fact, there's really nothing that you can do.
Not really. There are computers who can change it, but you can't fill in what's not there. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're pretty much stuck, but it's better. See, if you download it at 256 and decide you wanted to have it a lower rate, then you'd lose nothing converting it to a lower rate if you keep the original. So that way you have the choice. Where if you start at the lower rate, you can't go the other way.
You can't go the other way. Yeah. All right. Well, there we'll have to leave it with the promise that one of these days Rich will be back. In the meantime, on Thursdays you can see his column in the News Gazette. And then there's this radio show. What's the name of that show?
Oh, yeah. That's the Midnight Special. Folk Music and Farce, Show Tunes and Satire, Madness and Escape.
And when do we air that show?
That's Saturdays at 2 p.m. on AM 580 WILL.
It's a good show. If you like singer-songwriter music and folk music, if you haven't heard the show, you should tune in. It's a lot of fun. Rich Warren, thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure.
WILL programs are made possible by the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, presenting Romeo and Juliet, Winter's Tale, and the complete works of Shakespeare, abridged, from June 23rd through August 7th at the Ewing Manor in Bloomington. Ticket information is available at thefestival.org or 309-438-2535.
And that's it for us on Focus, but we want you to stay tuned. There is more coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine. The host for the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3, Urbana. In Kansas City, July wheat trading at 833.5. That's down 17.5. The September contract also off 17.5 at 851.5. July wheat in Chicago, 725, down 18. September, 757, down 90. 19. July corn 758 down 24 and a half. September 731 down 20 and three quarters. December 683 and three quarters down 20 and three quarters. March 695 down 21 and a quarter. July soybeans 1363 and three quarters down 19. August 1359 and a half down 18. September 1356 and a quarter down 19. November 1359 down 17 and three quarters. July soybean meal 358.60 down 11.50. July oil 56.65 down 17. June live cattle 104.15 up 95. August 105.15 up 112 and a half. August feeder cattle 127.27 and a half up 250. September 128.50 up 220. June lean hogs 91.80. That contract is down 66.